Welcome to TechNet Radio, your guide to the IT universe.
Hi, and welcome to TechNet Radio. I'm Charlie Harger. Glad you're along with us today. Michael Murphy in today's episode talks with Brad Dinnerman. Brad is the president of the New England Information Security Group. They also go by the name NISIG. He also lectures on theoretical physics. He's an IT pro, and he talks about forming a security group and organizing sessions. So some very practical advice for you on today's show. Also on the way, Christopher Budd will be talking about the new security releases from Microsoft this month. Allison Treadwell has some information on some upcoming webcasts you'll want to know about. And then we catch up with Robert Scoble on the upcoming media device wars and net neutrality. He has some provocative things to say about that. First off, though, let's head out to Michael Murphy talking with Brad Dinnerman here on TechNet Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the program. I'm pleased to have with us today Bradley Dinnerman. Brad, how are you doing?
I am very well, thank you, Michael.
Excellent. I'm glad that you could join us today. Brad currently serves as Vice President of Information Technology at MIS Alliance in Newton, Massachusetts, providing MIS and IT solutions to companies in the greater Boston area. He has taught classes in active server pages, JavaScript, HTML, and, believe it or not, the theory of relativity. He is a PhD from Boston College, and additionally serves as founder and president of the New England Information Security Group. And that's really why Brad is with us today. We want to talk about security. And so let's talk a little bit about what goes on at the New England Information Security Group and what you folks are working on up there.
Sure thing. The group, which we actually call NISIG, started out as a user group approximately 3 or so years ago. And it started to fill a void in the Boston area where there was no particular user group that focused on security. There were user groups for Exchange Server, for Windows Server, for Fox Pro, or any other application it was seen, but nothing on security. So I wanted to pick that up and form a group where professionals in the IT, MIS fields could meet to talk about security, any issues of security, and have it address their needs in their day-to-day work.
And so what does NISIG focus on? The broad security implementations across network infrastructures or particular components of that infrastructure?
It focuses on all aspects of IT-related security. We have monthly meetings with presentations that might focus on firewalls for 1 month. It might focus on passwords and policies another month, or even ethics and white hat hacking on another month. So we really try to fill many voids, all the issues that need addressing for a IT or a system administrator. And also we have educators and students, professors, law enforcement personnel that come to our meetings as well, even for them to learn about what they need to know about for their day-to-day jobs.
And certainly security is top of mind for all of us these days. So I'm certain that you've had a certain level of interest in what it is you folks are doing up there. Can I ask you, Brad, if I were in my marketplace trying to start a security users group, what kind of advice might you have for me, or can you tell me about some of the challenges that you've faced in getting started and getting up and running?
Surprisingly, it was fairly easy to get up and running. Before doing the security group, I was the chair of the Boston Area Exchange Server Users Group, so I had some experience running these groups in general. And when I decided that I wanted to start a security group, I basically gathered up the technology that I needed for an infrastructure. I purchased a server. I created a listserv. I put up a website. Once I did that, I tried to blanket all of the other user groups or their leaders with word that, hey, I'm starting a group. Please help me spread the word. And pretty much people started coming to me after that. It did not take a lot of effort. And as far as the part about purchasing my own server and infrastructure, I did that because although there are shared systems out there, lots of user groups, they all belong to either Yahoo groups or a more metropolitan user group community. The very nature of our group security meant that we would be an obvious target for hackers. So I didn't want to put that onto anybody else's system. So we got our own server.
And have you been hacked?
Not that I'm aware of. that's always the problem. No, there's been no obvious hacks. And I think they were fairly secure. I managed the server pretty well, but I'm not going to say that we're hack-proof by any stretch of the imagination. If someone had the determination, they could probably find a way in.
And in the security arena, what are you seeing today as the ubiquitous security issues? What's everybody dealing with, everybody's talking about?
By and far, the topics that raise everyone's blood pressure during our meetings seems to be spyware, malware in general, viruses, how to combat them. We can have endless discussions about that. They want to know about the products that can be used to solve these issues, or how we can deal with end users to prevent having these issues if the products are not in place. Another area that we always that is always of interest to us is remote access and security. If you have a user connecting from home over VPN, who knows what's on his system and what it's going to do to the corporate network? That's another area that's always hot with us.
Now, that's a big deal, and certainly we've done some things at Microsoft to make those remote users and those VPN users more secure. Have you implemented or experimented with network access quarantine control at all?
Not yet, but that's definitely one of the things that I'm looking forward to with the next releases of Windows. We certainly want to implement that across our client sites. And when I say our client sites, I'm referring to the day job where I work at MIS Alliance, not through my user group, NESIG. There's definitely this need to protect the corporate network from home systems. It's there. It needs to be done, and it needs to be done yesterday.
And so what are you doing for those in your work with the company, with MIS Alliance, with your corporate customers who are supporting VPN clients and remote access clients? What are you doing to secure those remote systems?
Well, we're aware that already there is a level of network access quarantine that you can implement with Windows 2003 Server, though it's not something that's really out of the box, easy to configure. So we try our best to advise and educate our users about the issues with connecting by VPN. And many of our clients are small businesses, and they run Small Business Server. And part of Small Business Server is what's called Remote Web Workplace. Users can connect through a virtual session, remote desktop, basically, and have access to their network. We try to encourage them to use that instead of VPN, because honestly, for most of our users, they really don't need a VPN. They just need access to data files and applications on their workstations. And they can get that out of the box with Remote Web Workplace and Small Business Server, or even just the terminal server.
And they can get it securely.
And they can do it much more securely, yes.
Okay. And when you talk about the client space that you work in, can you describe what your typical customers look like?
Sure. Our typical customers are anywhere from one workstation up to 600 workstations and 25 servers spread over multiple sites. In general, they're small to medium-sized businesses. They're all based in the metropolitan Boston region, and they cover a number of industries. We focus quite a bit on education, charter schools, for example. We have architecture firms, tax accountants. Any small business that needs IT support, that doesn't have an IT department, or that just needs to supplement the skills of their existing IT department, will come in and consult for them.
And you do a lot of work with schools and with education. Can you tell us any, because I know in the educational and the academic arena, there very often simply isn't the budget available to do a lot of things. Getting funding is always an issue there. Can you tell me about some of the issues or some of the things that you faced in trying to convince these folks that they need to be more secure?
Yep, absolutely. As you mentioned, budget is always the issue when it comes to schools. Schools would love to have brand new workstations and brand new servers and this or that functionality, but they just don't have the money. Or if they do, they don't want to spend it on IT infrastructure. So we need to get smart with what resources are available right there. Rather than buying the latest and greatest firewall that might be out there to prevent spyware. We might just have to get very smart with group policy and lock down systems so tight that no one can blink without someone being aware of it, and making sure that no one can install any applications. This is just standard group policy practice, but we have to perhaps conduct it even a bit stronger than we would with our other clients.
And looking in the security arena, what is exciting to you in the near term? What do you see as potentially very valuable to your customers in terms of new developments in technology?
Well, actually, Michael, we already hit on that, and that's the network access quarantine. Although, as I mentioned, it is available right now in some form, I would like to see something much more out of the box, easy to configure, because although I may be able to set it up, many of my engineers might not be able to if they're going on site. So I would like to see something that is easy to set up that will protect the corporate network from the home systems if they do connect by VPN. So I'm certainly looking forward to that. Also, I always get excited when new firewalls come out with all these new and great features. And some security purists might say, you know, don't put spyware protection on a firewall, put it somewhere else. But honestly, from my client space, a small business, we need it in one spot. So when developments like that come out, I'm definitely looking into it.
If I were to ask you to sum up for me, what are the three things that every working IT pro should know about security? How would you give it to me in three bullet points? What should people get educated on?
Certainly malware and how to protect against it and how to deal with it when they do get it. I won't say if they get it, but when they get it. I think every security professional nowadays needs to know that. It's just a key issue. I think also every security pro should know how to educate their users. What are the best practices? What are the acceptable policies that need to be given to the users? What can they do and can't they do? And also, I think that security pros need to know that no matter what they do, they're not going to be secure, fully secure. There is no such thing as fully secure. Maybe they'll be adequately secure, or maybe they'll be secure today, but you know what? Tomorrow they're not going to be secure anymore. So they need to stay on top of the situation.
I agree. I mean, I've often said that there is no such – the only fully 100% secure server is the server that is shut off and locked in a fireproof safe. That's it. If you expect to have functionality, there's always some level of risk, but we manage and mitigate those risks, right?
That is correct. It's the best that we can really do.
Mm-hmm. Now, let me ask you, just to kind of close the conversation here, what is, in terms of, we were talking a little bit before about how do we talk to customers and convince them to spend the money to be secure? Have you got a story of how you convinced a customer that they needed to do some security?
Sure do. This goes back about 5 or so years ago. We had a client, it was a very small business. They booked jobs for local bands. They booked gigs, basically. And this client, keeping in mind it was 5 years ago, they had Windows 98 workstations, and their server, and I use that term loosely, but their server was also a Windows 98 machine. They had an internet connection that was provided by the ISP directly to their server, public IP addresses, onto a Windows 98 machine. Long story short, we tried to tell this client, you need a firewall, you need to protect your network, and they just wouldn't buy it. Their excuse was, well, we've been safe so far. And I would talk and I would talk and talk until I turned blue, and they still wouldn't buy it. Finally, one day, this client happened to come to our office just because they had to drop off a workstation for troubleshooting. And as long as they were there, I said, come over here for a second. And I brought them to my machine, and over the internet, I mapped a drive to their server, if you can believe that. It prompted me for credentials, and I typed in administrator and password, and boom, I had their entire server in front of me. I selected their primary database, and I said, go ahead, click the delete key and watch what happens. The next day, we had a check for a firewall. It was wonderful.
That's great. Well, Brad, listen, I appreciate your time today. I know you're very busy. Is there anything else that you want to mention today or anything else that we should talk about?
all I can say is get secure and stay on top of things. Always make sure that your systems are as healthy as can be.
All right. Well, I certainly appreciate it. So this is Michael Murphy for TechNet Radio with Brad Dinnerman. I want to thank you so much for joining us today, Brad, and thank you all, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Michael. For more information on Brad Dinnerman and the New England Information Security Group, go to our website. You can find us at Microsoft.com/TN Radio. Next up, our monthly talk with Christopher Budd about new security releases from Microsoft this month on TechNet Radio.
Hello, I'm Christopher Budd, and I'm a Security Program Manager with the Microsoft Security Response Center. I'm joining my friends here at TechNet Radio today to give you a brief overview of the security bulletins that we're releasing today on July 11, 2006. This month, as part of our regular monthly bulletin release process, we're releasing 7 security bulletins. And for this month, it's probably easiest for you to think of them in 3 batches. The first are security bulletins which affect Microsoft Office and Office products. So MS06-037, MS06-038, and MS06-039 are the bulletins which apply to Microsoft Office. These are rated as important on the later versions of Office, Office XP in 2003, and critical on Office 2000. I should note that MS06-037 and MS06-038 both address issues that were publicly disclosed and publicly exploited in limited fashion at the time of bulletin release. For all of these, the main issue is that a maliciously formed Office document could run code in the security context of the logged on user. One thing to note is that later versions of Office will raise an additional warning dialog box that the user must click through. The next batch of bulletins are MS06-035 and MS06-036, and these are bulletins which affect all currently supported versions of Windows, except for Windows 98, 98 Second Edition, and Windows Millennium Edition. For both of these bulletins, these are vulnerabilities that affect networking components, and the impact of these would be to run code in the security context of the operating system. MS06-036 specifically affects the handling of server message block SMB packets, and so an attempt to exploit this vulnerability would require the ability to deliver SMB packets. MS06-036 affects a DHCP client within Windows, and a successful attack would require the ability to deliver a DHCP response to a DHCP request. Finally, the last two bulletins of the month are MS06-033 and MS06-034, and these affect the .NET Framework 2.0 and Internet Information Services. Both of these are rated as important. MS06-033 is an information disclosure vulnerability which could seek to be exploited through a malformed HTTP request. MS06-034 is a vulnerability that could result in code execution in the local system context, and this could occur if an attacker were able to place a specifically malformed ASP page on the system. So MS06-034 will primarily be of interest to those who run shared hosting environments. And that's a brief overview of the security bulletins for July 2006. A reminder that, as we do every month, we'll be doing a live webcast on Wednesday, July 12th at 11 a.m. Pacific time, where we'll take your questions live on the air. And finally, a reminder that the next security bulletin release will be on Tuesday, August 8th, with a target time of 10 p.m. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Christopher, on TechNet Radio. Next up, here's Allison Treadwell. She has some information on some upcoming webcasts you'll want to know about.
Hi, and welcome to TechNet Radio. I'm Allison Treadwell with a look at what's coming up with some webcasts for you to view. If you go to Microsoft.com/IT Showcase, find white papers, case studies, webcasts, and much more from Microsoft IT, well, you're going to get an in-depth look at how they plan for, deploy, and manage Microsoft's products within its own global enterprise. Something great that's on demand right now is how Microsoft IT does threat modeling. Microsoft has developed a process through which minimal input can produce a feature-rich threat model that identifies a wide range of critical information, including contextual threats, trust boundaries, fracture points, attack surfaces, and direct and transitive access control. This webcast describes and demonstrates this threat modeling process, It outlines its benefits and shows how threat modeling fits into the Microsoft security development lifestyle. You'll find this webcast and additional upcoming events as well, more on-demand webcasts too, and new content. Just go to Microsoft.com/IT Showcase under the webcast and multimedia link on the right sidebar. For TechNet Radio, I'm Allison Treadwell.
Allison Treadwell on TechNet Radio. And now we talk with Robert Scoble. He is going to talk about what is coming up in terms of him professionally. As you know, he just recently left Channel 9. He has some comments also on the upcoming media device wars and some things to say about net neutrality. So let's check in now with Robert Scoble on TechNet Radio. How is the move going?
It's going good. I start next week.
Got all your boxes packed, ready to go?
Oh, no, we're still in the middle of selling the house and buying a new one and all that fun stuff, so the moving will start at the end of the month.
A couple interesting things I saw on your blog, scobalizer.com. First of all, this was just very recent, the upcoming player wars, the media player wars, and I'm not talking Real versus Windows Media, I'm talking about iPod versus something perhaps coming out from Microsoft.
Yeah, that looks real interesting. It's rumored, I read that in the New York Times, I think, last night, and it's rumored to have Wi-Fi and a really nice video screen, so that gives me some hints as to what might be coming. But I think what they're going to try to do is be different than the iPod, and for instance, they could offer a subscription music service, which Apple hasn't yet proven any interest in doing. And that would be very popular because, you know, you can sign up for Napster or something like that, and for around $10 a month, you can get all the songs you want, where right now on iTunes, you have to pay $1 a song and download it, you know, and that's not as nice a model for listening to a wide variety of music.
Also, Ted Stevens, everybody's favorite senator from Alaska, he has a really stunning knowledge of the internets.
Yeah, he was like, oh, it's a big pipe between me and you, and that pipe is limited, which, I don't know, you know, if you really study how the internet works, it's not a pipe at all. It's more like a spider web, and you know, for instance, if I'm talking to you on Skype, my voice could be split up. My voice is actually split up into separate packets. And some of those packets could go through Russia. Some of them could go through Japan. Some of them could go through New York. And then they all get recombined on your computer on your side. And so the idea that there's one pipe between me and you is just sort of laughable if you really understand how the internet works. The only place that there's one thing is, you know, where it comes into my house. And, well, who controls that? It's the cable company. So, I mean, you can see where the net neutrality thing is going.
Very interesting. I've noted the rhetoric, even amongst people who normally don't care about stuff like this. The net neutrality is really starting to be a hot-button topic.
Well, they realize that the cable industry wants to turn it into cable TV and with good measure because, I just got a nice new HDTV, and what am I going to do on that HDTV? I'm going to hook it up to an internet service, and now I'm going to try to download movies to it or other content. And I'm already doing that with the Xbox, by the way. My Xbox 360 is already downloading movies in the middle of the night, and I, you know, when I start up my Xbox in the morning, there's a new movie trailer, or there's a new, you know, video to watch, or something like that, and that got delivered over the internet, and the cable companies are very nervous because they're not making any money off that.
Yeah, and I think they're not entirely crazy about the word convergence.
No, they don't like the idea that an Xbox is going to get so powerful, and it's really close to doing that, so that you can download everything you need, and then you can get rid of your digital cable box.
I know you're really busy, but I just really want to touch briefly on the new gig coming up. What's it feel like now? I note you're going to be a supervisor, a boss. What's that like for you?
Different, because I've never really managed people before, and even when I have, it was more of a co-worker kind of thing rather than, you know, me having to hire people and keep them happy and make them stars and all that fun stuff. And so that'll be an interesting new set of skills I have to develop.
And for people who are interested, you're no longer on Channel 9. Where can people start finding you online?
Well, I'll be on podtech.net soon. I start there next week. And for right now, I write my personal weblog, Scobalizer. So if you search a search engine for Robert or Scobal, you'll find me.
Have any big interviews lined up as you start off the new venture?
No, I'm just starting to think about who I want to do my first interview with and stuff like that. I had lunch with Jonathan Schwartz, the CEO of Sun Microsystems, and he said he would be happy to be my first interview, but I'm not even sure what the shows I'm going to be doing yet are. So.
Robert Scobal on TechNet Radio. We'll be speaking with him again the week after next, finding out what is going on with him and his career, and some interesting things happening down in Silicon Valley. For now, I'm Charlie Harger, reminding you, by the way, hey, set your RSS feed right now to get us every week on TechNet Radio. And if you have anything to say to us, drop us a line at tnradio@microsoft.com. I'm Charlie Harger, TechNet Radio.